Chapter 42. The opening stages of the boarding action went smoothly enough. Minotaur hung in space, a derelict. Emergency flashers along the hull blinked slowly, showing the ship was in distress. Even more ominous was the constant pinging tone that hit our headsets every 10 seconds. It was on every channel, a powerful signal that rhythmically informed us the ship was in dire trouble. No one aboard had bothered to turn it off, and as we weren't aboard yet, we couldn't either. It was the best evidence yet that the entire crew was dead. Who would have let that signal continue beeping for a solid week without acknowledging and canceling it? As we got closer to the ship, the tone pinged louder. It set my teeth on edge, and I had my crew lower the volume of their headsets' general channel and increase the volume on the squad channel. We could still hear the distress call, but it no longer interfered with our conversations. Our lifter spun around and began braking, setting up to land on the massive dreadnought's hull. The lifter was the most vulnerable at this stage of the game. If the enemy had gained control of the anti-ship weaponry, well, we were all as good as dead. Gritting our teeth and listening to that incessant pinging, we waited until the transport came to rest on Minotaur's hull. We felt the transport shiver as clamps were applied.
"We're down, and we're good," Graves announced to the unit.
His words were met with a ragged cheer. All around me, troops clutched their morph rifles and double-checked their suit integrity.
"All right," Graves said. "We're pumping all the air out of the lifter now, storing it in tanks for later. Prepare for hard vacuum."
I could already hear the steady hiss of escaping air. It grew in intensity, and it seemed to me that I could feel cold spots inside my armor. I don't think a space suit has ever been made that didn't have hot and cold spots in it under extreme conditions. Some of our suits were pretty banged up, and they didn't always work perfectly. My armor, for example, liked to pool up water in the lower left corner of my visor while in zero-G. It was really sweat and steam from my exhalations and not overly dangerous, but it did demonstrate that the dehumidifiers weren't operating at 100%.
"They tell me from the bridge that the outer clamshell controls have been accessed from an external port,"
Graves said, relaying what he was hearing from the brass channel.
"We're working with the AI to convince it to open up. That could be difficult if the transparent dome over Green Deck is compromised. The AI is programmed to prevent decompression."
"No shit," Carlos said to me. "Next he'll tell us the whole plan to break in through the glass is tits up. Then we'll have to go in using those acid holes the plants bored through the hull. You see if I'm..."
"Shut up, Ortiz," I said. For once, he did as I asked. No one wanted to hear about all the crap that could go wrong. We weren't on our first mission in space. We knew it was the most deadly environment any man could have the misfortune to fight in. A rumble went through the ship. Everyone put their right hand on their buckles and gripped their rifles with the left. Carlos looked at me, and I could see he was scared. "Remember the first time they pumped the air out of a lifter on us?" I asked him, smiling.
"Oh, yeah. How could I forget our first shared death experience? Graves is still a cold-hearted bastard. How can he maintain such a grim life after all these years? I mean, wouldn't you get tired of it?"
I waited for a second, but he didn't answer his own question. "I expect it gets into a man's blood," I told him. "After a few decades, it's all he knows." Carlos looked down at the deck. Debris floated around us. Discarded ammo, dangling straps and wires. What looked like a perfectly secured environment on the ground was rarely clean in space once everything started to drift in the air.
"You think we'll end up like Graves?" he asked, "not caring if we live or die?"
Frowning, I strained my brain for a few seconds, but as luck would have it, I didn't need to come up with an answer. Yellow flashers began rotating. The ramp was going down.
"Legionnaires," Graves said in our helmets. "We're going to move out in an organized fashion. Double-check your magnetics. If I see a man floating off with one of my last full sets of equipment into deep space, I'll shoot him in the ass."
The ramp lowered into the silence of space. The atmosphere was gone, so while we could feel the motors with our butts, we couldn't hear them with our ears.
The harsh starlight of L-374 shone like a beacon as the ramp lowered. When the ramp was fully deployed, we slapped the central button on our safety belts, and they fell away. We got up en masse, but at first we could hardly move. There were lots of troops ahead of my squad this time. As close as I could figure it, we were going to get off the lifter in the very last wave. Up ahead, troops exited in a steady stream, scrambling into the glare of the local star. The reflections from their helmets were dazzling.
"Is that clamshell open?" Sargon said. "I never heard Graves say. Does anyone know?"
"It's clear," Kivi said. "The embedded techs are talking. Lots of techs have buzzers now. Should I deploy one, veteran?"
I glanced at her. I knew she had 20 of them, but sending one out early was technically a waste. In open space, they couldn't use their wings. The tiny drones had to expend puffs of fuel to fly, and they had a very limited supply of that. Opening my mouth to deny her request, I had a second thought. For purposes of morale, it would be good to see what we were going up against.
"Fly one," I said. "Just one, mind you, and pipe the feed to everyone in the squad."
She hurried to obey. A few seconds later, my tapper displayed an over-the-shoulder view of the lines of troops. The image slewed and moved rapidly. With sickening speed, it zoomed past the helmets of 100 troops and out into the open. I watched my tapper in fascination. Open space. There wasn't anything around other than Minotaur and the colorful disk of Death World itself below us. I could see the clamshell drawn back and displaying the inner layer of hardened polymer that kept the cold void outside the ship. Along the rim of the dome, a growing throng of soldiers spread out. They were walking oddly, using their magnetic boots to keep them anchored to the metal hull. As we watched, a weaponeer in the lead squad fired his gun at the polymer sheet the troops were encircling. The effect was immediate and alarming. The ruptured surface exploded outward like a massive sheet of glass in slow motion. I could see air and water vapor escaping into space like a geyser. The mix frosted into a trillion ice crystals and began to coat the onlookers who stood too close to the edge. Up until that moment, everything had gone exactly according to plan. We'd flown up from Death World to Minotaur, docked, opened the clamshell, and punctured the dome. Honestly, I'd begun to hope that despite everything, we'd recapture the ship without a loss. Minotaur looked to be devoid of any life at all. What if the radiation had killed the Wurr as surely as it had killed the Legion and the crew? That would be a best-case scenario. And up until now, it had seemed possible. But then, as the air vented and the troops fell back from the fury of the blasting gases, I felt a rumble beneath my feet. Through Kivi's drone, I could now see what it was. The two halves of the clamshell dome, the blast shields that normally covered green deck, were beginning to close again. For about a second, no one reacted. The two metal half domes rolled up. The motion appeared to be slow from the point of view of the drone, but to people out there on the hull, it was moving pretty fast. Two figures were lifted up and tossed into space. They tumbled, ejected by the force of the moving dome. A few other figures were even less lucky. They were entangled in debris, and as the metal crescents rose, they were crushed to a pulp.
"Emergency," shouted Graves. "Everyone out of the lifter. Board Minotaur now, any way you can. That's an order."
We surged forward. The organized, shuffling mass of troops turned into a wild flood. I glanced one last time at my tapper to glimpse the view Kivi was relaying from her drone. Troops were throwing themselves into the geyser of escaping gas, fighting against the pressure to get inside. The geyser was visibly weaker now, but with nothing for the invading troops to push against, they were having a hard time overcoming that gushing current. Meanwhile, the clamshells were still moving, shutting themselves at a steady rate. I could tell from the look of the choked-up group ahead of us that we weren't even going to make it to the exit before Minotaur closed up again.
"Squad," I shouted. "Everyone release your magnetics and jump up. Climb on the ceiling, hand over hand."
They hesitated until they saw me do as I'd ordered. Then they followed my lead. Moving as fast as I could, I dragged myself over the ceiling, which was webbed with storage nets and the like. Employing this tactic, we at least made it to the ramp. Behind me, I could see others adopting my approach. The ceiling of the lifter was thronged with troops who were moving like spiders.
"What do we do when we get out into the open?" Carlos demanded from behind me. "Just throw ourselves out into space?"
"Yes, launch yourselves like you can fly. When you're over the dome, open the external venting valve on your secondary air tank. Make sure the nozzle is aimed toward open space opposite your angle of flight. Use it like propellant. Remember that trick from VAC training?"
"Hell no," Carlos answered.
"Well, it will work. Open up your spare tank and let it push you downward. That's an order."
They grumbled, and I could hear a lot of rapid, almost panicky breathing over their microphones. No one liked the idea of expending their limited air supply as a propellant, but they didn't openly refuse. I launched first, as I was the man in front. I think in retrospect, I kicked off too hard. It was like pushing off from the wall of a pool and gliding forward, only in space there was no water to slow me down. Soaring like a bird, I flew over the heads of 100 struggling troops. I could see ahead that the dome was more than half shut. The jaws of the blast shield were coming together, and soon whoever was caught in them would be crushed. Up high, the two halves of the dome were farther apart. I glided into this space, and the light of L-374 was shut out immediately. Stark shadow enclosed me, and I could feel the cold of it right through my suit. A steady hiss began as I employed my spare tank. I fired it behind me and a little upward. The force began to push me down. Still, I could see I wasn't going to make it. I was moving too fast. Before I could slow down, I was going to fly right out the other side of the closing dome.
"Squad, deploy the tank early," I shouted. "I might not make it. My tank isn't providing enough counter thrust."
"I'm in," said Kiwi. "I can see you, Miguel. You're too high."
Cursing, I struggled and looked around for a solution. It's hard to think while spinning. Worse, my helmet blocked much of my vision. I couldn't look over my shoulder, and I could barely see down into the dome. Finally, I came up with a plan at the last second. I opened my main tank. That did the trick. I shot down into the clamshell, and they closed silently over me, shutting out the light of the star and most of our troops. I quickly closed both tanks and checked the oxygen levels. I thudded gently into the closed dome and pushed off it to sail down toward the others. They were peering down through the breach into the dark unknown that was Green Deck. Joining them, I took stock of my situation. We were officially aboard Minotaur. But that's where the good news ended. Half my squad had been left outside, along with 2/3 of all our invading troops. Even better, I was down to 3 hours of air. Tops.